B3. Number 8A.
Now, we have an epitome on the first four chapters. We can ask now, right away, as long as we still are in the rhythm of those four, what would be the common denominator for all these four chapters? Could we find an epitome that would sum up the standpoint of all four? And perhaps as it has to do with that approach to be delivered from evil, with the command really to cast out evil, by doing what? Actually, by having supremacy over evil. I think we could perhaps put it this way, that we just say evil must be mastered. So in the vertical here, we can write evil must be mastered. That's the word. All right, I go on to the next chapter, Animal Magnetism. It's a short chapter. And in this chapter, actually, there are practically no references on the question how to handle evil. But she builds up the atmosphere through the references on evil, where she says that evil is not a power, and that evil is an outlaw, is a wrongdoer, and evil is wrong. This, you see, this has nothing to do with handling evil, but builds up the point, which is afterwards the essential thing. Here she takes up the belief that evil has a power, has action, acts wrongly, and then she shows how to handle it by saying that science despoils the kingdom of evil. So here we could perhaps write down as an epitome in the fifth chapter, science has the power to despoil evil. Yes. See, again, an epitome that is absolutely different from the preceding four statements. We come to sixth chapter, Science, Theology, and Medicine, where she says now what the power of Christian Science is, what can despoil really that kingdom of evil, and brings out that really it is the power of mind or of truth that can take care of that whole situation. She says in the text that the might of mind brings the extinction of all evil. You can now hear something which she hasn't said in the first three chapters. She turns now to the synonymous terms and says, within the power and the potency of the synonymous terms lies the power to tackle the so-called or power of evil. That's why in the fifth chapter she had first to bring out that evil is powerless, that actually evil has no real power. So when we have seen that, then in the sixth chapter she begins to show that the power to handle evil lies in the synonymous terms. She says that Christian Science reveals God as exempt from all evil, therefore truth casts out evil called disease. The power of truth casts out evil. Can you hear now? It's always now truth casts out evil. Very different from the second, where you also had casting out evil, the second chapter, but there it was just a command. See, it was just an appeal that evil should be cast out, that is a prerequisite, so to say. But when we ask, but how on earth can we do that? Then in the sixth chapter, she would say that truth, or the power of truth, casts out evil. So we may put that down as an epitome in the sixth chapter, that the power of truth casts out evil. The power of truth casts out evil. chapter 7, physiology, is the most interesting chapter in this regard, because when Jesus said in the 5th chapter that evil has no power, and then in the 6th chapter that truth casts out evil, then you ask yourself now, why does truth cast out evil if evil has no power? And she gives in the 7th chapter the answer that the only power that evil has is therefore to destroy itself. That under the impact of the 6th chapter, the power of truth, really evil is shown as that which can only destroy itself and never something else. She says in the text, the only power of evil is to destroy itself. See, we never had anything like that before. Or she says, evil betrays its weakness and falls never to rise. See, evil betrays its own weakness and falls. Again, another wording, other terms, saying that evil within itself decays. Falsehood strips evil of all pretensions. Again, the debunking of evil, the dismantling, so to say, of the claim that evil has power, and so evil just resolves itself, it destroys itself. All right, perhaps we can write here in 7, the only power of evil is to destroy itself. Isn't it amazing how she changes the subject from chapter to chapter and never repeats itself again? Once she has finished with one aspect, it's finished, and she doesn't take it up anymore as a main subject. But naturally, she may take it up as a reminder in one reference also in a later chapter. That's how everybody would write a book. That's how everybody would explain something when I explain to you something. I always somehow, when I'm at, the, say, point 9, I would say, as we have seen in point 2, so and so, I would take it in as a reminder, but not as a main subject. So there again, naturally, we can't be more papal than the Pope, as we say. You say papal, the adjective of a pope? Well, meaning we can't be so literal in that research, you see, that you, that one comes along and says, but you know, down there in the chapter 16 or 14, she also says that we should be delivered from evil, just as in the first chapter. So naturally, that's natural, huh? It's in the flow how one writes that one reminds in a later chapter what one has said in an earlier chapter. But one sees at once that this is not a repetition of the main tone. So here we have a completely new tone again, that we see that evil is handled because, and can be handled because, evil does destroy itself. So we don't have to destroy evil. Can you see the flow? First, in the 5th chapter, we could see there is a science that can despoil the kingdom of evil. How? The 6th chapter says there is a power of truth that takes care of that. How does it take care of that? Not that we have to destroy evil, but because truth destroys evil, we can see that evil, which is not an entity, is destroying itself. It just recoils and recoils until it's nothing left. We come to Footsteps of Truth, the 8th chapter. Here she shows again something else, namely that if we have an understanding really of the powerlessness of evil, of the nothingness of evil, then we see that evil cannot be mightier than good. So all what we need to see is, or to have, is an understanding, a discernment of the nature of God, good. And if we understand good, then really this destroys the so-called power of evil. She says, evil cannot check the reward of good. See, it has no power to check the reward of good. As we advance spiritually, evil becomes more obnoxious. Showing it is depending on our discernment of good that evil falls back on itself. Therefore, evil is not supreme. It cannot resist that truth. Evil is not mightier than good. You see, she brings up the position that says evil cannot resist that impact of truth which she has been showing in chapter 5, 6, and 7. Evil is not the master of good. Again, God is of purer eyes than to behold evil. So if we have that those pure eye of beholding what good is, then evil cannot be mightier than good. So all depends really on our discernment of good, our understanding of good, and our understanding of good really destroys the so-called power of evil. Shall we put it down and at 8 and perhaps say, discernment of God, good, destroys the belief in the power of evil. All right. So we have taken those four chapters, and right here we can ask ourselves, what is the common denominator for these four chapters? What is the epitome which we can give for the whole vertical on those four? And you can see at once that all those four chapters have all to do with the question, has evil power? What kind of power has evil? Has it no power? Is it powerless? Has it power to resist good, to check good, or has it not? Is truth the power that can destroy evil? Is the understanding of truth really the power that despoils evil? It's all about the power sense of evil. And so either we can perhaps write here the powerlessness of evil, or if you like it perhaps better in a positive sense, that truth is the power to destroy evil. Truth is the power to destroy evil. Yes? Okay. Let's go to the next four chapters and see if she still can vary further the whole question of handling evil, how she tackles that question. We come to chapter creation as the next chapter. And here we get the sense that because creation is of the nature of idea, because it is God's own creation, because man is God's own creation, that man really therefore should not let himself be used by evil. That the way really to handle evil is that we are not going to let ourselves be used by evil. Then we handle it. That we are not lending ourselves to be the channel of evil. That we are not, I think that's quite a good expression, not the channel of evil, an instrument, a tool of evil. That we really guard our soul to that point that we are not used for an evil intention, for an evil creation. He says that carnal beliefs make men produce evil. See, carnal beliefs use men in order to achieve what evil wants to achieve, namely to produce evil. even then when he would like to create good. It's the old clamoring of Paul, that he said, the evil that I would not like to do, I do, and the good I want to do, I do not. Under the law, he could see the that evil beliefs really would like to use as a tool, as an instrument, man, in order to achieve its purpose. Therefore, if we can impersonalize evil, then we kill evil. He says, the sinner makes his own hell by doing evil. See, again, the sinner, he lets himself be used, and therefore he makes his own hell by using evil. She says that aiding evil with evil would deceive the very elect. Even the very elect is under the danger of being the instrument, the tool, the channel, the medium of evil. Can you hear? They all have the same subject, not to be used by evil. So we can here put down, mortals must not let themselves be used by evil. I think we should correct it a little bit. You can put it in. I think we should put it into the positive and say that mortal must let themselves be used by good instead of evil. I think this is much more positive, huh? Mortals must let themselves be used by good instead of evil. I come to the next chapter. When one feels that we must use good, and that really handles the evil in so far that it handles the belief that we can be used by evil, to be an instrument of evil, then we can see, therefore, that if we give to the good all what is necessary, if we see good as reality, that handles evil as unreality, that if we see the somethingness, the identity, the reality, the somethingness of good, that demonstrates really the unreality, the nothingness of evil. In this chapter, which is rather long, one has quite a lot of references. I just try somehow to epitomize it. She said, Jesus' demonstration unfolded unreality. They unfolded the unreality, the nothingness of evil. Can you see again? Jesus' demonstration. That what he demonstrated was that there were always ideas, the somethingness of good. And it demonstrated what? The unreality, the nothingness of evil. It is that what we had yesterday. Again, that there is only one, that there are not two. But that the demonstration of good demonstrates the unreality of evil, and also the other way around, demonstrating the nothingness of evil demonstrates the somethingness of good. That they are two sides of the same coin. The triumphs of Christian Science are recorded in the destruction of evil. Again, the demonstration of the good is the destruction of evil. Christian Science brings to light what? The entireness of good and the nothingness of evil. Can you hear? It's always the same. Jesus demonstrated the good, and this demonstrated the nothingness of evil. Christian Science brings to light the entireness of good, that demonstrates the very opposite, that the opposite is nothing. Evil is nothing. Constantly that sense of demonstration of the Christ power in action and bringing out the nothingness of evil. Science demonstrates the unreality of evil. And so it goes on. Therefore, here is another aspect, we didn't have that before, which says that the demonstration Perhaps that's the epitome we can put in, that the demonstration of the somethingness of good, that the demonstration of the somethingness of good demonstrates the nothingness of evil. Yes? We come to objections answered. Come to these objections that are brought forward always against Christian Science, and they must be answered. The objections usually are, you know, in general, in the human thought, is namely that God knows evil, that God makes evil, that God cooperates with evil. That's the old theological sense of it. And therefore, here in the objections answer, we find the way of handling those false suggestions, that it says we have to deny that God does know evil, that God does cooperate with evil. You see, we have to deny that very fact that God is dualistic. She speaks here of the impossibility of God producing evil. Can you see now? It's those questions. I deny God's cooperation with evil. We deny that God made evil and made evil good. Can you see constantly that the relationship between good and evil? God cannot dwell in evil. See, we didn't have that up to now. We felt that this would be all over the place in the textbook. That to deny that, to set that right, that God does cooperate with evil, that God made evil, that God communicates evil, that God sanctions evil, just as all theology does. Here, in objections answered, she shows, no, well, that is what we have to deny. So our epitome here may be denying that God either knows evil, makes evil. Oh, it gets a bit the long one, huh? Yeah. I think we just could abbreviate it and somehow render it and say, well, God is not involved in evil. Huh? God is not involved in evil. Huh? Sorry. But that's how we do it, you know, how I do it. I change it every time a little bit until it crystallizes. So, God is not involved in evil. Then we come to Christian Science practice, that big, big chapter. And actually there are only a few references in it in regard how to handle evil. That's an interesting phenomenon. And it all boils down really to asking us to avail ourselves really of the supremacy of good over evil, that is practice, that we practice good and know that practicing good really brings the superiority, the supremacy of good over evil. She says that we must increase the ability to master evil, that we should resist evil and it will flee from you, to avail ourselves of the supremacy of God, of good over evil. And see, it's always that through our understanding we avail ourselves of the good, and that takes care of evil. So let's perhaps write down the epitome and say, availing ourselves of the supremacy of good, availing ourselves of the supremacy of good causes evil to disappear. Can you see really practice, huh? That's practice. Okay.